everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In all the things I do, the way we consult with people, the way we help people, probably the biggest wound comes around relationships. Such a funny thing, relationships. I think relationships are getting more difficult than ever. And I've said it before, I think that we're not just normal humans walking around the way we used to. I think the love in the 50s was a lot different than love in the 2009s. I think something happens to our chemistry. I think we eat, drink, and find enough chemicals in our food and in our water that it changes us. It makes us more chemically responsive and different. What kind of people have we become? We've become the kind of people who spend our time on treadmills to keep ourselves in shape. You know, I mean, it's pretty hard. The kind of people who throw out machines. Like I was reading about 90 million televisions having to be thrown out because they're not flat screens anymore and everybody has them in their basements and there's no place to throw them except into landfills. We've become a very strange world. Those cathode tubes are going to break down and become part of our chemistry. And just, it's unusual, we humans. So when we talk about evolutionary psychology, we talk about the psychology of humans as we evolved. But it's very hard to think of evolutionary psychology without thinking about some of these current transformations that are taking place. What's happening right now? What's happening in this century? What's happening as we speed up the information and we get brains so much more active than they used to be? You know, a kid who's got, who would have a certain amount of time for playtime and unstructured time no longer has that. Now they have structured play and very active and they learn things and the average child is so much smarter than most of the adults. How is it happening? We're changing brains. By feeding all this information to our children, by giving them all this stimulation, we now have another thing we have to deal with. A syndrome called ADD. Where did that come from? It came from hyperstimulation. So we now give you a chemical to slow down your stimulation. Or even one that speeds up your stimulation to match it. What a funny thing. We got a chemical to slow you down and we got a chemical to speed you up. The chemical to speed you up if you've got ADD, it's like giving Ritalin to kids. It's like let's give you a form of speed so that you will match our form of chemical speed. And when we're in harmony, then you won't feel bad anymore and you'll be able to study. Or we give you antidepressants. Again, adjusting your chemistry. So we're in a chemical evolutionary world, and I'm not putting it down. This is just the way we are, you know. This is what's happening. There's no escaping it. So then what happens to romance and what happens to love? Think about courtship. You know, courtship has always been important. I was reading, where is that article, Stephanie, on our flies? Here it is. Blink twice if you like me. Fireflies. Fireflies, the fireflies flashing in the air are all males. This is a study that came out today from Tufts University. 6 species of fireflies. And it's like they have this flickering thing. And what it is that these 6 different species of fireflies are all around at the same time. But what the males do are the males are the ones that are flying. And they're flying and they're giving off flash patterns that represent their genetic code. So it could be 2 dots and a dash, you know, or it could be 2 dashes and a dot. It could be whatever it is. But this means you're my type. a female down on the ground recognizing a male up there that may be of her type, and there's a very big percentage of males versus females. What is it, 500 to 1 or something like that? And so when she sees it, she flashes back. She gives back a flash that says, I'm over here, right? And now he spots her, and then there's a good chance of their mating. More goes on than that, of course. It is so intense what happens among these fireflies. So intense that they're out there. Keep in mind, they live underground. How many years, Stephanie? 2 years underground? 2 years underground, and then the fireflies come out. And then they live for 2 weeks. And then that's it. They're food. You know, for somebody who comes along who has a diet of fireflies, who I'm sure there is a firefly eater out there. Maybe other fireflies eat them. So this kind of thing that we do, going out there and flashing our lights and hoping that the appropriate mate is going to catch us, you know, that's why they have cars. That's why we have fins on cars, and that's why we have suits that cost a lot of money, because we want to look sharp, because we want to catch the fireflies sitting in the grass. So one way to do it is to display your wares. Right? Another way to do it is to actively find the firefly you want, and then, as some fireflies do, imitate the flashing of its corresponding mate. Fake it out. What the hell? You don't care. You just want to have sex. That's your mandate. So what you could do is, like many of the other insects do in life, you could imitate the flashings of the female so that she'll mate with you, thinking that you're this other kind. So this is kind of nature. This is courtship. Courtship is about perpetuating the species. Perpetuating the species is about the male being able to pass on his genes to the female. Now, we call that sex if we want. Sex. Sex is the behavior. Sex is the thing, you know, but is it a sex drive? No, it's a procreation drive. You know, what do you think about the darning needle, I think it is, and many other animals, you know, many other insects out there, the minute they have sex, they die. You know, or it can't be a sex drive. It's not going to be too, you know, you're horny. It just means you are driven to procreate. Okay, so now this changes, and we get to humans. Humans have that drive, of course. But humans are different than all other animals when it comes to mating. And here's the most interesting part. And to this, I have to give credit to Roberta Mariotti for coming up with this one. In our research that we did on the evolution of people, you know, when people were coming around, when humankind was developing, it found that the female, right, the female, when she was in estrus, meaning when she was ready, as soon as she started going into her cycle, a male would respond. Now, this is nature. This is the interesting thing about nature. You don't have animals having random sex in nature. You do among certain monkeys, I think. You know, the bonobos. But I think that's because there's a constant estrus among the females. I mean, among the males and the females. But that's an exception. Mostly in nature, a female is in heat, meaning she's ready. The male responds. Now, so what did this do to the humans, right? How come humans are always trying to have sex? Human males are trying to have sex whether the female is ready or not. How come? Well, females learned a long time ago that the human race was going to die out because as we were growing, the human skull was getting larger. Part of what human evolution was the brain, the skull, actually getting larger. And believe it or not, at one point, the human skull was too large for the female pelvis to pass through. The baby's, the infant skull, got too large. The immature pelvis could not accept the very large head. What that meant was 12 and 13-year-old females could not afford to get pregnant, because if they got pregnant, they would die because there was no cesarean or anything like that. You know, it was just the baby was going to kill the mother, and the baby would die too. So the females of our species had to keep us alive. Every one of us have to be thankful to this little item. What did the females do to keep the males from forcing sex on a female who just happens to be an estrus at the beginning of her life, 12 and 13 years old? What they learned to do is hide estrus. Females learned to hide the fact that they were ready for sex. Now, when females learned to hide that at an early age, that stayed with them forever. Now, what did that do to the males? The males, of course, are now looking, where is the female, which one is ready? And he keeps looking around for which one is ready, which one is ready, and which one is ready, and he can't figure it out. He can't say, how do I get, is this one ready, is that one ready? So courtship develops. Courtship develops by a male trying to see if a female is responsive to him. And so he goes around doing things to try to see if this is the time by putting himself out there. And this is what developed this whole idea of romantic love and romance eventually evolved out of this need for courtship. Now, again, are we only talking about sex? I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's more than that. What is romance? Is romance, as one of my researchers said, simply something that gets a female prepared for the male because the female needs more time than the male does to get ready for the male? She needs to be more prepared. And how do you get her prepared? What are the things that we have learned to do? Well, I mean, let's go away from the science. How to be romantic. There is intrinsic romance. There are things that we have that are symbols of romance. For example, a high-powered rifle is not romantic. Well, maybe it is in some way to some people. Science fiction is not romantic. It's not very romantic. You know, you want to go out with somebody for the first time, you take them to Star Trek. Maybe. Right? Things that are romantic are things that are shaped like a heart. Right? You get something shaped like a heart, that's romantic. How about cute things? Teddy bears are romantic. Puppies are romantic. Babies, baby archers, cherubs are romantic. Photographs of two little kids exhibiting an unnatural affection for each other and roses that are in color that have a fragrance are romantic. Taking advantage of this is a thing. That's what they sell, right? They sell you. Low light is romantic. Highlight is not romantic. Candles are romantic. Sunrises and sunsets are romantic. Any kind of low light is romantic, hence why dinner dates after dark are more romantic than lunch dates at noon. Combine low light sources and it stands to reason that the air of romance will be thick. Your beloved will be blind to anything else but the radiance of your shimmering lightness. Keep it dim around us and I only focus on you. Red, the color, is romantic. Why? Because red is the color of love and passion. Red is the color that says it's what happens to your skin when blood fills your skin in certain areas, especially in the genitals. Red. Red roses mean I love you. Yellow roses, which you may think are romantic, says let's be friends. Right? Not the same. So get her red roses, red ribbons, red balloons, red teddy bears, red puppies, and red tickets to the World Series. Well, maybe not. Background music. Background music is romantic. And note the word background, because not just any music is romantic. For music to be romantic, it must be too soft to hear. It must be barely audible. See? It must not be lively. It must not be funny. It must not demand too much attention. strangely enough, elevator music is very romantic music. I know it makes you nauseous. Chocolates are not only romantic, they're complimentary. When you give a box of chocolates to your beloved, you say you can pig out on this tub of lard, and don't worry if you bloat out from all of this fat food. I love you anyway. Chocolate also has chemistry that makes you feel romantic and sexual. Fancy curly things are romantic. So the most intrinsically romantic thing ever would be, based on this data, would be a small red candle made out of chocolate and shaped like a teddy bear holding a heart with scribbles all over it that plays a tune when you wind it up. You can't go wrong. You know, practical things are not romantic. It's your anniversary. Don't buy your wife a washing machine. It's not romantic. Blenders, toaster ovens, they don't work. Personal stuff. You know, romance is personal. To be romantic, you have to be personal. Time is a very romantic thing. Giving your time to another person. Hence, this brings about an issue that one of my associates here mentioned. The most romantic thing is to make another person feel like they are the center of your universe. That's the most romantic thing, you think, right? No, not true. Because there are people who, when they feel that they're the center of your universe, they want to run away. Because they feel if they're the center of your universe, they have a responsibility to you, and they have enough responsibilities in their mind, and they want you not to be the center. In fact, they would rather know that you were dating somebody else so that you didn't depend on them completely. Some people are like that. In fact, there are some people for whom romance is that you barely ever think about them, but you call once in a while. They fall romantically in love with somebody who barely pays them attention. And the most romantic thing you could do is stay away. For some people. Romance is confusing, isn't it? Imagine if you're on the other side of this and trying to make it work. Imagine if you're the average male or female trying to make it work. How do women make romance? There's a good question. Are men the only romantic ones, or are they romantic? Are men romantic at all? Do men, when they do this romance, are they thinking anything other than seduction? And I don't mean sexual seduction. They are thinking to themselves, what will make her happy? What would she like? She'd like candles. What would she like? She'd like soft music. What would she like? She'd like something unusual. Something not the same. Something a little different. A little surprise. What will make her feel good, right? And you go and you plan all this. Now, why are you planning this? You're enjoying this moment as a man because on one level, you know you're pleasing her. And on another level, you know that it's going to mean a better time for you. I don't think it's all self-serving, but I don't think it's intrinsic in men to be romantic. I don't think men are romantic with each other. Unless they're homosexual. I don't think that men are romantic with each other. I think women tend to be a little more romantic with each other than men do. Because you can think of girls kind of doing nice things with other girls sometimes, buying flowers or being sweet. But this main thing that men are supposed to do, you know, is something that they have to learn. Learn how to be romantic. You learn how to do this, supposedly, and you learn, therefore, that somebody that's Firefly is going to flash you from the grass because your romantic ability. Now, is romantic ability only seduction? Let's switch on the other side. Are women ever romantic? Well, when we think about women being romantic, we think about two things. One is dominant women. Dominant women with submissive men are very romantic. Because they are the men, and the men, the submissive men, are the women. They switch roles. So in their maleness of their dominance, they become seductive. They become the kind of person who woos the other person, who is more likely, as a man, more shy. So he's shy and pulling away, just as a female would, and you, the aggressive woman, are moving towards him. A switch in roles happens frequently. The other thing about women related to men, which is kind of interesting, is that a woman, if a woman wanted to really, really romance a guy, she would say, honey, I got us two tickets to the 40-yard line to see the Jets game. Right? It's a surprise for you. What a shock. What a surprise. I remember once in my early days, a woman who I had just met said, I'm going to go rafting down the Tuolumne River in California. And the person I was supposed to go with didn't want to go. Do you want to go with me? I said, sure. A surprise, a jump. Something interesting, something different. There is a way to get to a man, but it's not going to be the candles. It's not going to be the soft candles unless it's for the seduction, unless it's just for the invitation for sex. You know, if a woman is seducing a man, that's one thing. But there's a lot more to romance than sex. It's really trying to get some kind of a commitment, some kind of a relationship going, where you are showing each other that you care about each other. This is Armand DeMille with you with the personal, with the positive mind, personal mind. Giving you ideas, concepts, guests. Help you lead a more positively minded life. Now, romance is one thing. I know you've heard me talk about it, but love is a funny thing. Love has all kinds of funny aspects to it. Now, when do you know that you are in romantic or feeling romantic? Or when is it crazy? When is the romance, like, there are a lot of people who have romance for people who don't even know they exist. Right? That exists a lot. That happens a lot. There's a thing called limerence. Limerence refers to an involuntary cognitive and emotional state of intense romantic desire for another person. Now, this limerence happens to be more of a female thing than a male thing, which is a strange thing, right? The term was coined by Dorothy Tenoff to describe the ultimate near-obsessional form of romantic love. And what it is you have this romantic love towards somebody who you fantasize about all the time, but you make no move towards. You may have never even met them. But it's intrusive thinking and pronounced sensitivity to external events that reflect the disposition of the limerent object towards the individual. And you know this happens a lot? Happens a lot with rock stars and movie stars. Young girls fall in love with musical heroes. In love with. You have a crush on. Of course, it's only a crush, but for some people, it's obsessive. You know, any star can be the source of limerence, and limerence itself can really drive somebody crazy. I mean, it drives them to suicide, to homicide. People who are limerent very often, there are many cases of where they decide, the reason that the other person is not with me is because his girlfriend or wife is preventing him, and they kill the girlfriend or wife. They actually go to kill them, to hurt them. Limerence. So it's that's another form. We call that romance. We say, oh, that's romance. No, that's not romance. So I want to ask you about your own romantic stuff. And when we get back from our break today, I want to ask you about your own definition of what romance is to you. Now, studies in neuroscience have involved chemicals that are present in the brain might be involved in this kind of romantic feeling. And these chemicals include testosterone, estrogen, dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, oxytocin, and vasopressin. Adequate brain levels of testosterone seem important for male and female sexual behavior. Dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin are often commonly found during the attraction phase of a relationship. You know, dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin are commonly found during the attraction time. Oxytocin and vasopressin seem to be more clearly linked to long-term bonding and relationships characterized by strong attachments, and watch out for prolactin. It could certainly pop up at any moment where you think that you just want nothing but to get away from the other person. If I could get away from you, I'll be happy again. It's all chemical. You're a chemical Dumbo. Prolactin is working. Oxytocin, you're bonding. Prolactin, you got to get away. That's why you see so many divorces. You know, divorces at age 50 and 60. You see divorces because the people are prolactin. You know, hormones take place, either one, either male or female. Hormones change, and when they change, boy, that love and affection turns into a distance that is just something. And unless you're brave enough to challenge it, unless you're somebody who says, like Stephanie Dombra says, you can push through it. Unless you're somebody who could try to push through it, you could just never, you just got to give yourself over to the animals, you know. Just turn yourself over and say, all right, that's it. Next. Next. So easy. Romance. So neurochemistry. Just to finish with that, there are two major drives, right? So the two major drives are sexual attraction is one, but attachment is another drive. You want to get attached. It's not all about sex. And serotonin, the serotonin effect of being in love has a similar chemical appearance to kind of an obsessive-compulsive disorder. It's not very different. When you're in love and an obsessive-compulsive disorder, it's almost very similar in the chemical part of it. I know a couple at the edge of a divorce. The wife went on an antidepressant. Now, the beauty of antidepressants, or the terrible thing about antidepressants, is they break away from your bonding chemicals. You tend not to bond as well when you're in an antidepressant. You think it's the lack of oxytocin, or do you think it's the active prolactin? I'm asking my researcher over here. It's an interesting question. So it's one of the things that happen. Antidepressants, one of the side effects of it is a person feels distant. I know people who have taken Topamax and found a tremendous kind of loss of love around that. What would Topamax affect? The dopamine system? What? And the whole pleasure system. Nerve growth factor. The Italian scientist at Pavia University found that a protein molecule known as the nerve growth factor, NGF, has high levels when people first fall in love, but they return to previous levels after a year. Results showed that NGF levels were significantly higher in the subjects in love, and it feels good. NGF factors feel good. So, what can I tell you? There is so much at work that whatever you think is at work is not at work. It looks so simple. Why don't you just respect me? Why don't you just talk to me? Why don't you just give me what I need? All you got to do is, and all the solutions that come up after that, these ridiculous solutions, maybe we should take a break for a year. Maybe we should separate. Maybe we should. Romantic Dumbos, all of us. I tell you, my friends, pushing through this to a new level is an opportunity for very few people. But if you go for it, I would. Gianna Pavarotti. I think about this, Amor de Tibieta. Amor de Tibieta. I think about Luciano, and I think about Michael Jackson, and I think about them. I'm a silly guy when it comes to it, but I kind of think about them dancing in the heavens somewhere. I don't think about the religious heaven, but I just think about them dancing up in the heavens and kind of taking these two remarkable talents, voices, and matching them together. And, hey, I wanted to meet you. You know, hey, yeah, you want to try? Let me teach you the moonwalk. And I can see Pavarotti walking the moonwalk, and I can see Michael Jackson doing some operatic notes. I hope there's a wonderful place where everybody meets, you know, where all the spirit kind of gets together, and whether it's just the molecules break apart and we enter the, leave the trappings of our body and all get together. True romance, you know, true romance is tough. Here we are trying to bond with one other human being, and really it's a connection that means so much. Some people say that if you don't allow yourself to really bond, later, when the big time comes, you don't feel that kind of connection with the universe. It's an interesting question, that love is a practice for an afterlife. A thought. Well, listen, I was just reading an article about how the Tibetan monks are now training all the Tibetan students to study science. They're sending them out, and it's in the New York Times today, they're sending them out to read science, learn all about this stuff, as opposed to the other stuff that they've been learning. So Tibetan Buddhism, which has kind of rejected science for a number of years, is now embracing science as part of the Dalai Lama's work. This is the 212-209-2900. Romance is the question. Are we pathologizing romance? Yes, I pathologize everything because that was one of the accusations last week, of course. What does pathologizing mean? It means that for every good thing, for everything we have in life, there's some times when you go overboard with it and it's not as stable as it could be. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMilhaj. You're on the air.
2900. Let's take one of your calls.
Hello.
This is Armand DeMilhaj. You're on
Could
here.
You turn down your radio, please?
2900.
You have to turn it off.
Okay.
Thank you. Now you're on the air. Hello? Well, that was a moment of stage fright, I think. 212-209-2900. Do call back. We'll take your call. Hello there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. This always happens on Tuesdays as we set it back up with our strange setting here. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there. You're on the air. We're going to make this connection.
Hello?
Yes. Hi there.
Yeah, my name is Tim. I'm in a situation right now. I'm with somebody, but they're not with me, and I'm right there. It's really amazing.
Tell me what you mean, Tim.
Well, we've been together 22 years. We're not married, but she doesn't want to really be alone with me much. She wants me to be around her, but there's no touching. There's no... She goes days without talking to me, which is okay. There's no intimacy.
How old is she?
57.
Yeah. And have you've been with her all day? Did you live with her during this time?
No, we always kept separate. I mean, we've been together, but we've never actually, you know, been totally in one roof, you know.
And has she ever talked about hormonal changes that she's gone through in this period of time?
Well, she's always going to the doctor for headaches and female things, and she's always got some kind of ailment. Now she said her heart. She's always, it's a good thing she has good health insurance because she's always running for something.
So what means is that she's got two things. She's got a frail system. You know, she's got a frail body, and that her body is responsive. And if it's female things that you're talking about, and she's running to the doctor a lot, and she's got headaches, I'm suspecting there is a serotonin disorder somewhere in here. And this is kind of what we were talking about. You see, here it comes. What's your name, Tim?
Yeah.
Tim. Here it is. If you learn all there is to learn about this, learn about chemicals, learn about hormones, learn about what she may be going through. Try to find out. Now, you see, I hear a part of you is scoffing her. You're kind of mocking her for going to the doctors. And she knows that. She's going to the doctors because she's trying to find some kind of answer to this feeling that she has inside, this feeling of unrest, whether it be the migraines, whether it be other problems that she has. But what I'm hearing, what you're saying, is that she is an unhappy person inside, and she's looking for somebody to comfort her. Now, you, being somebody who's being distanced, as she prolacts you or pushes you at a distance, or maybe it is the way you're approaching her that makes her feel like she's got to push you at a distance. So the question becomes, Tim, is there another way for you to approach her? Is there another way for you to be near her without being critical or angry at her? Because clearly you're angry.
Well, you know what it is. It's I work very hard, and I like to have a physical relationship with a woman, especially when I'm seeing in a, you know, a one-on-one relationship. And I'm very tempted just to stray and go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, this politician that got in trouble, he went to Argentina. You know, we don't know what's happening at home, but, you know, when these women, when they just shut down and you're feeling vibrant and you're healthy, and it's just hard for me. Maybe I'm being, she says I'm selfish. Maybe I'm just selfish.
She says to you, you're selfish if you want to be with someone else.
Well, that, and even if I want to be with her, she says, oh, not now, not tonight, maybe the weekend, maybe
yeah.
this.
Yeah, it seems like, I'll tell you something, Tim. I understand this. Believe me, I understand this. I have seen it so often, and I know that it's hard for the average man to be compassionate and understand what she is going through. She's unhappy. And she is trying to set down guidelines, but you're angry. And so when you're angry and she's unhappy, the two of those things mix together, and the only thing she could do is distance herself from you. Would you please ask her if she is willing to see a counselor?
She's already told me no.
She said no? Then are you willing to see a counselor?
I have been, yes.
Okay, I'm going to find you another counselor. I want to find you someone who understands women at the level that she's at, because the level that she's at is very understandable. And if you could get to a point where you could feel some kind of compassion for her, knowing and understanding her, I think it would make things different.
Well, it's very interesting.
Yes,
it is. It is hard to leave her. I do feel
absolutely.
Very strong.
You're bonded. I hear it. You're connected, and you're bonded, and you don't want to go. I know.
Well, Armand, if I feel that if I bumped in or met somebody else, which I'm not really actively doing,
You'd start up with somebody else. I know.
I think I would just stray, because just maybe just the physical. I mean, I'm just I'm like living like a monk or a priest now, which is fine, but it's not fine every day, because it's just, I don't know, the physical is important to me. It's just puzzling. But it's interesting you're talking about it. And as far as the chemicals, I mean, I'm not a pharmacist. But
you don't have to be a pharmacist to understand that nowadays it's almost essential for a man to understand, if he's going to have a relationship with anybody in their 40s, if he's going to be a relationship with somebody, especially you get past 7 years of being with somebody, and they get into their 40s or they get near their 50s, you've got to be ready for these changes, both in the man and in the woman. The man has to own his own needs, his own changes, his own hormones, and the woman has...
Armand, can her sexual or physical desire come back?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's kind of intervention, you're saying, like with the counselor? Or...
Now, wait a minute. I'm getting a signal here from Stephanie. Stephanie, come get on the line here. Stephanie, who deals with this for a living, this is what she does. Stephanie, what's the answer to the question? What was the question you just had?
Hello, Tim. I had a question about when this stopped between the two of you. When was your sexual intimacy going on? Until what time? When did this stop?
I'd say about 2 years ago it really started. You know what? After her, it was two things. After her father passed away and after her divorce. She was a long-term separation, and then when she got divorced, she had to pay a lot of money.
Oh, boy.
She's very bitter about that. I gave her engagement ring. She kept the ring, but she doesn't want to get married now. And when her father passed, she was an only child. She was very close. Her father did everything for her. When he passed, I don't think we've slept not very much. That's like almost 2 years ago.
You know, one of these effects, an enormous combination of effects, and I've seen it up close. Somebody's father dies. She gets done with every man. It's an amazing thing. It's like it, when dad goes, something happens on the inside and you disconnect. It's not true for all women, but it is true for some women. I've seen that. Tim, I think you've got to learn. And Stephanie, you were leading somewhere with your question. Where were you going to with when did this happen? Was it, what was the event around it that made it happen? Was that your question?
Both external things and obviously her biology and her, you know, chemistry. Hormones.
Well, her biology, I don't know, she keeps saying that she gets spotting and bleeding and she doesn't want to have, like, you know, if sex is too uncomfortable. It's like, I'm a healthy guy, I'm just cut off here, and I've tried to understand it the best
way. Yeah, no, you haven't tried, you haven't done enough research on it. So if you want to, send me an email, and I'll try to direct you to some sources.
All righty, where do I write?
It's Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com.
Right, sir. I thank you, and I appreciate you.
Tim, my heart goes out to you. I will say this much to you. Very few men have the courage to push through it.
Most of them just bail out, I guess.
They just bail. I don't blame you for bailing, but it just takes... Let's see what we can do. Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Oh, my friend, if you knew how painful love was, you'd say to yourself, I give up completely. Hi there, you're on the air.
Armand, I have to tell you that your program gets me really upset.
Oops.
You know, I listen to these generalities you make and
Didn't you call me on Thursday?
No, I haven't. I haven't spoken to you at all.
Oh, what's your name?
My name is Peter.
Peter, hi. What upsets you about this?
It's. I feel bad for people who are not very sophisticated, for people who are impressionable, who may be listening to your program, and you make these generalizations about
what, Peter?
Like all men are, all women are. Your model is really a middle class model that you refer to when you talk about all men. It's a segment of middle class. Maybe even New York society.
And not you, right? This does not refer to you, none of this.
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. Generalizations, you know,
could you give me a specific example of that, what I say that offends you?
Okay, when you tell someone calls and you say, what you really feel is, and then blah, blah, blah.
When did
I
say that?
Last week you said it a couple of times.
You've got to do something from today. Cause
you have to listen to, if you want to take responsibility...
Sure.
For,
I tell
for
you what you do.
Do. You have to listen to your air checks.
Okay, Tim, I do listen to my air checks. Peter, I do listen to my air checks. How about the following, okay? Work with me, and I'll listen.
I'm trying to work with you now.
Find me
a
section.
Don't put me off.
I'm not putting you off. I'm saying...
You are. Let me finish
Now, Peter, now you're just becoming... You know, there's a time when a person...
What am I? Tell me.
There's a time when a person is looking to collaborate and say, look, let's make things better. And then there's a time when a person is objectionable and just oppositional.
What are you feeling at this moment?
I'm telling you, at this moment I'm asking you, can you send me or email me or
why can't we do it right now?
Because I don't want to be on a show with you just having you constantly confront when there is no interest you have on making anything better.
Oh, I do have
interest. Okay, Peter, I'm not going there with you. 212-209-2900, because that's the problem. The problem is we got to work at it together. How many times do people talk to each other where they offend each other? But you got to stop at some point and say, here's my specific. Here, this bothered me. But when everything that a person says back to you is another opposition, you know it's not meant to make things better. It's just meant to be oppositional. I don't want to get engaged in oppositional stuff. However, you could write to me anytime. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi.
Okay.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. I'm just turning my radio down.
I wanted to touch base with you. I really appreciate that you biologize and physiologize what we go through, and I think some people think that is pathology.
Right.
And what I really liked was how you're talking about fireflies and how they flash their different lights. And
isn't that a beautiful story?
Colors.
It's in the New York Times today, in the New York Times science section today. It's a much longer story, and it's just exquisite.
Where I would maybe sympathize with what what Peter was saying is how I would rather investigate, like, how I flash and how someone else flashes, and that maybe a science fiction movie is romantic for different people, and that it's not always teddy bears and chocolates and all of that. Like, I felt like it was more leading and inquisitive for all of us to investigate what we're flashing and how
what's
we
romantic.
Give of ourselves to match someone else's pattern and might not even be realizing that.
That's a good point. What is romantic to you? What do you find that is? Because you're right. I mean, absolutely. What I was reading was a list of things of what people find romantic, and that leads to what people buy. Do you know what I mean? People find chocolate romantic. I don't find chocolate romantic. They find teddy bears romantic. I think that's a waste. But this is what people buy, okay?
Right.
But the question to you is, what do you think goes beyond this? And what's your name, by the way?
My name is Brian.
Brian, what goes beyond this in romance to you? Because you're an intelligent man who doesn't just go believe in buying chocolates and candy and that kind of thing. What do you think is really important in romance?
I think it's giving and making yourself receptive to someone. Like, low lighting and low music sort of make us, we have to look a little deeper in the dark, and we have to listen a little more quietly, and, you know, sort of like a general softening of the senses sort of makes the person who's talking to us that much more important, which is not to say, let's do something romantic, let's go to the movies. What would you really like to see? And if it turns out to be like it's the same pattern that your partner wants to go to, then great. And then if your partner wants to maybe see something that you want to see, then they're sort of giving you an opportunity to be given something by them. I think it's like a sensitivity and a receptivity to accept people as they are, and maybe they're not so passionately inclined that day, and I think that could be just as romantic. Mm. I think, you know, the hunting rifle could be romantic. And what do you think about the bromance trend that was all over TV?
What romance trend?
The bromance trend?
Yeah.
There was the Brody Jenner show, where it was sort of like a reality show where he was, I don't know, sort of like a cross between an audition and a hazing of like 10 guys who were selected for him to choose from among them the one who proved himself well enough to be his best bro, sort of like the Paris Hilton.
Yeah,
isn't
my
best
friend,
you know, the tequila.
I didn't see it, but there must be something in it to attract people, you know, and to have gotten you, Brian, to watch it.
I was hooked.
Hooked by what?
It was very interesting.
Hooked by the selection process?
By the selection process and by the application process.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, you're a smart man. Thank you for calling in, Brian.
Thank you.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Time to take one more call. Hi there, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Oh, hello, Armand. I've heard your program for many years. I'm Forrest.
Forrest?
Yes.
Hi there. Could you turn down your radio, Forrest?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear the radio, though, feedback
hello?
In the background.
Can you?
Now I hear you, yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Well, I was very interested in today's subject. I was in a 2.5-year-long relationship with a woman who is 5 years younger than me. I'm 31. And over the winter, I ended up having to work a lot, and I didn't get to see her that much, and that really weighed heavily on her, but I felt it was important to make a lot of money. And we got more and more distant to the point where when I was in my busiest working point, she said to me, you know, we need to talk. I feel we're getting distant. I said, you know, just wait a few weeks till I actually have time, and maybe we can confront this and work through it. And over those few weeks, she decided she didn't want to work through it. Am I still on the line?
Yeah, you are. So maybe she found someone else. Is that what happened?
I'm not sure.
But you suspected, I imagine.
I do. I do.
So then the two of you became three.
Yes.
You know?
And I didn't know about any third. I just knew that she started pulling away. And by this point, when I had time to speak with her, she had already moved on in her mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember an old poem about that that was...
Yep.
It kind of happens, you know, it happens. Around the poem was, around her stood and she knew a towering wall that would not fall. Outside her gate and she knew he stood forsaken. The wall could not be shaken.
Wow.
So finally, when the wall falls down, he tried to get to her. Oh, I'm hearing your feedback again. Can you turn your radio off again, Forrest? Forrest, so the question becomes, how do you deal with this grief, you know?
Well, I mean, I tried confronting her, and the more I tried confronting her, the more she pushed me away.
Once you get to that once you get to that stage where the person has turned you off,
yes,
it's very hard to get back through pounding on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, it just...
I mean, I literally kicked her door in, and I'm not a violent person, but I mean, she ended up literally closing the door on me, and I kicked it in just thinking if I could get her to really see me again, then
so
we could continue. But it really, you know, it backfired. It just made her close up even more.
Well, give it a little time. Give it a little time, and it's difficult. You have to find another part of your heart here, and I'm really sorry for you because this is a very painful. It's what I'm talking about when I talk about the amount of pain that people go through around this issue.
We were in a two-piece traveling band. You know, she was my best friend and confidant and my bandmate. And, and you know, when she left me, everything that I held dear fell apart, basically.
Sorry to hear it, Forrest. I wish we had more time to talk. You could feel
free
to email me, and I will respond, okay? Thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Four men calling in today. How do you like that? With respect to all of you, I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to send an email, it's armand@thepositivemind.com.
That's The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. He'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. right here over 99.5 FM, WBAI and WBAI.org. I'm Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide, 82 degrees at 156. Coming up at 2 p.m. will be the Arts Magazine Talkback with Hugh Hamilton at 3 o'clock. And by the way, the premiums, thankfully, are on their way out now, and in terms of the invoices have been sent out. And as I said, the premiums are going out each and every day. The premium department in Yvonne and Richie is helping a lot, and we're getting the premiums out to you. Those are the thank you gifts that we promise to send out to you at the conclusion of the fundraising drive, all throughout the spring fundraising drive, and they're now going out. We had some problems in the past with not fulfilling those obligations, but now the premiums are going out, and we thank you all so very, very much for your continued support of WBAI. As I said, the Arts Magazine coming up at 2 p.m. Thank you again so much for tuning in. Tell a friend or two about us, and tell a friend about WBAI.org.
Last weekend, the leadership of the nation's largest women's rights organization, the National Organization for Women, changed hands. Kim Gandy stepped down as president to be replaced by Terry O'Neill. On Thursday, July 2nd at 11 a.m., Joy of Resistance will feature a live interview with incoming now president Terry O'Neill. We'll be discussing the future of women in the age of Obama and O'Neill's vision for now. Moretta Short and Zenaida Menzies, who both attended the NOW convention, will also give us the inside story of the hard-fought race. Then we'll cover the birth of a new national radical feminist organization.